Hey friends, this is Gideon Tsang. I am one of the pastors here at Vox Veniae. And before you listen to the homily, we just want to invite you to consider partnering with us. And so we've been using a plant metaphor. So when you grow a plant, you start in a smaller container, and then so it can form and mature slowly. And so we've had this beautiful container, we've called it Space 12, and our roots have gently formed. And in 12 years, lots of exciting things have happened there. We've hosted nonprofits, advocacy groups, school coalitions, neighborhood associations, artists, poets, musicians. And then in July, we actually bought a building. It's just 3 blocks from Space 12, and I think we can form deeper roots. We're super excited. And so in this Advent season, we're just going to ask a couple times, will you partner with us? Will you, or maybe you can ask friends, perhaps family members, to partner with us as we finish up renovations. So what's super cool is that we have some generous donors. They're going to match our gifts at 100%. So if you want to, say, give a gift of $1,000, it'll be matched. Boom, $1,000. If someone else wants to offer $10, boom, $10. And so it's a gentle ask. Will you consider inviting your friends and family to partner with us? If you want to find out more, you can check out roots.voxveniae.com. And we pray that your season of Advent will be rest-filled and deeply meaningful. And I know some of you have journeyed with us from really close by, and some of you are from across the world, and so we're really thankful. Thank you for your partnership. We're grateful for your generosity, and enjoy the homily. Thank you.
We have one of our own people from the community that's going to open scriptures today, Matt Inman, who shared with us. He said, don't mention my podcast, which is called Inefficiency, because I haven't put a new one up in like 6 months. But he did create a new zine, which is kind of cool. I think it's Inefficiency Zine or Magazine. Sorry, a zine, I guess, is like a different thing, maybe. I think Gideon has a poem in it, right? So if you just want to see Gideon's poetry, but I think there's other good stuff in it, too. And and he woke up a little congested, so he, you know, be nice to him today, not mean like usual. But no, let's welcome him up as he comes to open the scriptures today. He's not sick, he just was like, no, he's fine. Just hand sanitizer before you.
Front row right here. Good morning. So we're getting close to Christmas. How many are traveling this week? They're leaving town. That's substantial, I guess. Well, we are in the third week of Advent, and the theme is love. And the passage today is going to be on peace. So for anybody nervous with family dynamics, I'll try to hook you up with a little something to go home with. I want to start us off with a question. And it's something you can think of to yourself, okay? Can you name a time when you realized that you were out beyond your comfort zone? What happened, and how did you respond? Okay, so just take a little bit of time and think about that to yourself. So just go ahead and store that in the back of your mind, and it's something that you can refer to as we go along. When I thought about the question, one memory that surfaced for me was a time that I went on a work trip to Hawaii. I was a part of a retreat team, and we all went snorkeling, which isn't something I've done before. And we went to a beach on Oahu called Cockroach Cove, which sounds disgusting. But yeah, it looks like this. It's gorgeous. I recommend it. Not too touristy. And we saw sea turtles. It was great. So the same group went back a few years later to Kauai, and we all wanted to go snorkeling. So I was like, of course, we're going to go. But this time was different because the reef was further out and we only had a couple masks, so we had to like share. And so I entered the water by myself. I was excited, started swimming, and I got into like maybe 15, 20 feet of water, which is a little further out than I would typically go in the ocean. And I started swimming and I started feeling like really alone. And not in like my normal existential aloneness. But like I'm swimming in a shark tank by myself. And I started imagining like a great white like coming out of the darkness. And so I kind of started to do what my tendency is in some of these situations. I never had a brush with death. I never saw one. But I was just enough far outside of my comfort zone that I surfaced and went back to shore. And I didn't get to see the reef that I really wanted to see. And we all have our own tendencies in these uncomfortable spaces. Some of us are going to say, I'm going to die and we need to get out of here. And others are, let's throw down, right? And if we're going to be people who are continually growing, it's important to work on what stories we tell ourselves at these particular growth edges. The outer edges of what is known to us and what is comfortable for us. When we're able to move out beyond the breakers and keep a level of peace, we call this equanimity. It's this beautiful word that means mental calmness, composure, and evenness of temper, especially in difficult situations. If we don't have much experience hanging out at our edges, our normal, thoughtful, loving dispositions can just fly out the window. And it's in these places that our work begins. To allow the love to speak into our defensiveness and our fears, bringing peace to us, opposed to preserving old and damaging narratives that we think are going to save us. So today our focus is going to be on the love of God and how that brings us to the peace of God. And our scripture today is Philippians 4, 4 through 9. So let's go ahead and read that out loud together. Let's start at the beginning, and I'll just start. Let your gentleness be known to everyone. I want to focus on this term gentleness because it's actually a hard word to translate because it means a lot of different things. So some people wouldn't use the word gentleness here. They would use things like moderation or patience, softness, modesty, forbearance. The list goes on. One has... let everyone know that you would meet a man halfway, which I like. But the NRSV here says, let your gentleness be known to everybody. And gentleness is tough work, and I think Paul knows this. He's writing this letter of unity and joy and contentment from his own edge, which is a Roman jail. If we or the ones we are with are out beyond our edges, most likely gentleness is in short supply. Whether we are in a defensive posture or an offensive posture, our bodies typically follow suit, right? We tighten up, our speech gets rushed. An author and attorney, Bob Goff, recommends to his clients on the witness stand to go palms up, to put their palms on their laps, because our tendency is to ball them up and to kind of like grip our thighs. And then that's kind of like everything flows out of that. But it's really difficult actually to be defensive when your palms are up. But gentleness isn't just a technique. This thing is about love. And 1 Corinthians 1:13 says, if I speak in the tongues of men or of angels, but I don't have love, I'm a resounding gong and a clanging cymbal. And this is no more apparent in therapy, where someone can be right about an issue, but oh so wrong when it comes to how they communicate it or how they live it out. The kind of love that we're talking about here leads us to probably the last translation of gentleness. It's justice beyond justice, which is very meta. It's when we honor the letter of the law far more than the spirit of the law. And we miss the person entirely. We could bring down the hammer of justice and it would be called appropriate or good. But if we could introduce into the picture mercy, we would have a greater sense of justice and redemption. So one person you might not think about, let's see here, Sarah Silverman, the comedian, you might not think about her as someone who's gentle. But if you look at what she's been up to lately, she's a big proponent of therapy. She has a show called I Love You, America. And she's just been creating more spaces for acceptance. And most recently, she had a Twitter interaction with a guy, and it went something like this. I was going to screenshot this, but there's some choice language in it. And I was trying to go PG-13-ish, like, I don't know what the... So I had to change some stuff. So Jeremy Jamrazzi, coming out of nowhere, you're a bad person. He didn't say that. He said something much more cutting. But once again, it's PG. So Sarah, I believe in you. It's not what I was expecting. I read your timeline and I see what you're doing. And your rage is thinly veiled pain. But you know that. I know this feeling. P.S. My back effing sucks too. See what happens when you choose love? I see it in you. So she just kind of went gentle, right? She could have went hard on him. She went gentle, gave him some space, and he actually uses that space to become vulnerable. Jeremy, I can't choose love. A man that resembles Kevin Spacey took that away when I was 8. I can't find peace. If I could find that guy who ripped my body, who stripped my innocence, I'd kill him. He effed me up. And I'm poor, so it's hard to get help. Sarah, questions, not judging. Are you doing heroin? It's kind of a weird question. Are you self-medicating? Do you want to get clean? Jeremy, no, I just smoke weed. I prescribed medication, which I take accordingly. Sarah, good. I want to kill him too. I can't imagine your rage. All I know is this rage. Even if you could kill him, it's punishing yourself. And you don't deserve punishment. You deserve support. Go to one of these support groups, and you might meet one of your best brothers there. Jeremy, I will go. And I'll say this real quick. I think this is his growth edge. I think this is kind of that place where it's like, if I step out, this is like, I don't know what's going to happen. And when we're all there, there's a lot of stuff going on in our brains that's giving us all the reasons why we shouldn't do it, right? And he's experiencing that right now. He says, I don't trust anyone. I've been burned so many times. I'd give the shirt off my back, and every time I get burned. I'm super antisocial. I have no friends. And then wait for it. I'm sorry that I gave you trouble. Now, as a therapist, I would really like for Sarah to acknowledge his apology. But I think she does something actually really brilliant here, because that would just be honoring the justice. But she's actually trying to go beyond justice into something else, which is more for him. And so she says, dude, I don't care. I'm fine. Let's get back to the really important thing. I see something in you. My gut tells me you could have a great life. My shrink says we don't get what we want, we get what we think we deserve. I'm telling you, you deserve so much more than you know. So Jeremy had an injustice done to him, and he had internal and external forces keeping him from growth. She provided gentleness to him, and he was able to move out in new ways. And when we look at scriptures, it's Jesus who lived out this justice beyond justice. The Pharisees were interested in only executing the exact letter of the law, where Jesus was looking deeper into each person. And he not only saw the spirit of the law, but he called this the fulfillment of the law. It is the gentleness of God that gives us our own space to learn how to tolerate our edges and even expand them. And it's this love that we can give to others. So as a spiritual practice this holiday season, when you feel like yourself or maybe a family member is close to their edge, introduce a gentle mercy into the dynamic. See it as a loving, maybe a love inviting them to not just grow defensive, but to maybe tolerate new growth. Let's move on. The next text says, do not worry about anything. It's a big ask. But in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. So I could do a lot with this. There's a lot that he packs into this. When we're out at our edges, we inevitably have conversations with ourselves. And if we're lucky, they turn into prayers. Here, I think Paul is trying to teach us how to pray. And it's kind of where we can begin to come downstairs from our worrying minds and bring all of that into our prayers, both our requests and our gratitude. And I think a very beautiful picture of that is our prayer, the prayers of the people here. And we can kind of feel the tensions of life and what we're trying to pursue. And I could say that when I've been at my most unhappy, when I'm way out beyond what is comfortable and I'm drifting, my prayers are not these passionate Psalms of David. They're actually really boring. And I think they're boring, one, because I have very little emotional insight when I'm in those places. I have zero gratitude, and I have like 700 requests of God. And we all find ourselves in these spaces from time to time. And when we lack thanksgiving in them, but I don't necessarily know if it's always because we're ungrateful. I think a lot of times it's because we're losing sight of love and that we are loved. This is Karen Horney, which is an unfortunate name. Particularly if you are a woman in the 30s coming right after Freud. But she owned it, and she put words on two different self states. So first you have the real self, which is kind of who you are in this instant, right? Complexities and all. And then you have the ideal self, which is who you want to be, who you want to become for the sake of significance and identity. And we tend to like this ideal self. We see it as the direction of hope. We see it the pursuit of our potential. But Karen Horney saw things very differently. She believed what robbed us of gratitude and acceptance and ultimately our peace was the pursuit of this ideal self. She saw the ideal self as a neurotic idea opposed to any potential reality. She often called it the idealized self. She believed that as children, we didn't see life as lacking, but we internalized it as that we were the ones lacking. And if we could just reach like a different place, then we could finally, like finally bring our loose ends together. And maybe then we could find the identity and the significance and the love that we long for. But she said that acceptance and gratitude in our lives is next to impossible when we're in hot pursuit of this ideal self. And this is why she made her life's work about diminishing the ideal self and helping us to accept our real selves. She believed that real healing and real peace could only come from the real self. Not someplace out there, but right here. And love plays a pretty pivotal role in this. Worry and self-hatred are just a couple paths that we take when we feel like life isn't measuring up for us. It's here that we've lost sight of love in our lives. And too often, the way forward in this unloved state is not learning to accept our real selves, but we double down and we start hating ourselves even more. Like, how many of us have gone to the gym because we hate our bodies? How much of the things that we do that are healthy are really actually motivated out of hate? We end up hating what needs healing. We end up hating what needs healing. These wounded selves can't be hated away. They can only be loved away. And we see this within Christ, who was born and he lived and died, not because he hated us, but because he loved us. I want to show you a video. I got permission to share this Humans of New York clip. It's of a man wrestling with what is alive inside of him, as well as his lovability. And as you watch, I want you to pay attention to what is going on inside of you.
Well, I expect to be a movie star out in Hollywood at this point in my life, directing movies and TV and having been a star and making a transition from acting to directing, but I just didn't get, I didn't get myself there, so. Having a lot of regrets and maybe running out of time, I don't know. I'm working, if I'm a character, if I'm on stage, if I'm in a play or a movie, if I'm creating something, building something, then I'm alive. When I'm not creating something, I'm not alive. How I want to be remembered is someone having achieved their dream. So right now I really don't want to be remembered. if I don't achieve my dream before I don't deserve to be remembered. Why do I give up? I've lost my energy. I get tired. Get tired of the struggle. I'm not a fighter. That's why I give up. I'm not a fighter. Got to be a fighter. You gotta go out there and pitch and sell, and you gotta be on.
So I want to take a moment of silence, maybe a minute. So if you feel comfortable, like close your eyes and maybe get comfortable. I'm going to ask a couple questions of you. What emotion was going through you while you watched that? What thoughts came rushing in? Where does this man's wrestling invite you into your own wrestling? What difficult areas in your life do you feel like your lovability is on the line? And where do you struggle knowing the difference between what leads you to gratitude and what keeps you from gratitude? Go ahead and open your eyes. How many feel heavier than they did like 5 minutes ago? You're welcome. No, really, like pay it, if you do, that's an important feeling. I want you to pay attention to it. When we can accept our real selves and that wrestling, I think we can learn how to pray better into our real selves. So as a spiritual practice, take the emotions and thoughts that you had during this moment and bring them into your prayers this week. Where might the love and acceptance of God bring a greater sense of peace? Let's get to the last point here. Finally, beloved, whatever is true, honorable, just, pure, pleasing, commendable, think about these things. So when we're struggling out beyond our comfort zones, when we want to give into the fear and the shame and the apathy, Paul is trying to show us a way back by focusing on what is good. At times, religion has used a passage like this to suppress difficult emotions and even sometimes cries of injustice. But I don't think he's trying to do that here. I think he's actually trying to help us move into them and soothe them. He isn't asking us to focus on positivity. He's asking us to focus on what is good and what is true. And there's a really big difference there. So it's not only just focusing on what is true or what is maybe honorable, but it's also the tensions that go into upholding it, right? So if you're going to think about what is honorable, let's say in like friendship, you're also probably going to have to look at care and play and honesty and conflict resolution. And it's going to be informed in real time, in real relationship, and not something that's an idea, theoretical. Paul asks us to do the hard work of focusing, which is learning to sense the presence of God and the good embedded in the ordinary. I was reflecting on Gideon's question that he had for us a few weeks ago. He asked, where do you feel the gentle nearness of God? And I tried to focus, right? I tried to focus my attention on what that was for me and where the good in it is for me. And I sat with it a bit, and I was trying to be like super spiritual about it. And like I was going out there, and I was trying to come back. And what I kept coming back to were my kids. I was thinking about my son, and it felt like a kind of a random thing, but I was thinking of my 7-year-old introverted boy, when someone's giving him a compliment, he is so uncomfortable. You know, his body's just like moving around and his tongue's like dancing outside his mouth. And like, he's just like, and I just know him, right? And I know that his body wants to run away. But I also know him enough to know that his heart is just lapping it up. And then I thought about my daughter and her cute little 2-year-old body, like only wearing a diaper. And most days stopping right in front of me, and she does this like karate thing. And she's like, fight, fight me. And it's so adorable. And I feel very privileged every time that happens. And but it's like her invitation to wrestle and to tickle and to snuggle. And I was just thinking, like, why is that stuff coming up for me? And I think a lot of it is like I am fully enjoying them in that moment as they are. Like, I'm spending zero energy trying to change them. And I know some of that's just this kind of radical acceptance of a father. But the thing is like when we wrestle, like half the time this stuff ends in tears, right? Like somebody bonks their head or somebody feels slighted. And not only do I come back to them over and over, but I also feel that acceptance. Like I kind of get hit with the fact that they come back to me over and over, like within my faults, within my own impatience. And maybe that's just the, like the developmental years, like, I don't know what it'll be like as teenagers, but it's beautiful and it's a picture of something. Acceptance of our truest, most real selves is what God gives us, and it settles our soul. We'll always have work to do on ourselves, but it's so delightful to know that if we don't get to all of it, we're okay. So as a spiritual practice, where do you feel the peace of God in your life? Write out a list of who and what is able to help turn your focus back to what is good and true. As we move toward Christmas, we are reminded of the one who came in no ideal way. And we follow the one who frees us from all of our idealized ways. He was gentle when others were forceful. He gave thanks when others wanted more. The subversion of Christ turns our focus to what is real and good in this world. May we find the equanimity in the uncomfortable spaces. May we experience love and peace out beyond the breakers and learn to focus and discern the convictions and dreams of the real self from the fantasies of the ideal. May we simply not look for love and peace, but learn how to co-create it with others. I want to end this time with a Hafez poem as our prayer. Admit something. Everyone you see, you say to them, love me. Of course, you do not do this out loud, otherwise someone would call the cops. Still though, think about this. Focus on this. This great pull in us to connect. Why not become the one who lives with a full moon in each eye that is always saying, with that sweet moon language, what every other eye in this world is dying to hear. And the gentleness of the Father, the vulnerability of the Son, and the omnipresence of the Holy Spirit. Amen.